Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Connie reading Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, April 16, 2020. Coronavirus in Midland. MMH, Medical Lodge, sends daily updates. Two nursing homes responsible for at least 8 confirmed cases after case reported Wednesday. By Caitlin Randall. Midland Memorial Hospital is receiving daily updates from Midland Medical Lodge after 5 employees and 2 residents tested positive for COVID-19, CEO Russell Meyer said during Wednesday's press briefing. The City of Midland Health Department confirmed Tuesday that 4 administrative employees, 2 residents, and 1 part-time nurse at the facility were confirmed positive for the virus. The nurse and residents are inpatient at the hospital while the administrative employees are isolated at home. Meyer said Chief Medical Officer Dr. Larry Wilson has spoken with the director of the nursing home. We expect to be in contact with them at least daily so that we can anticipate the course of treatment of those residents, he said. And if that should become a source of a significant additional population that is included for the hospital, then we're prepared for that. Nursing homes are one of the largest sources of coronavirus outbreaks nationwide, Myers said. The New York Times reported the number of coronavirus-related deaths at United States nursing homes has passed 3,800. On Wednesday, the city reported a resident of Manor Park in West Midland was the 36th confirmed case inside Midland County. Then, later in the day, the city reported number 37, another resident of Midland Medical Lodge. It's one of our biggest concerns that that is a population of older and more vulnerable patients who can become ill in large numbers and then eventually need hospital care, Meyer said. So we want to stay close to that, remain prepared, and help the Midland Medical Lodge folks as much as we can. He said the health department will also be involved in actively monitoring those cases. Midland Medical Lodge has created an isolation wing similar to the COVID-19 ward in the hospital to house any residents who experience symptoms of the virus, according to Myers. Additionally, without Wilson provided an update Wednesday on MMH's use of the antiviral drug hydroxychloroquine to treat COVID-19 patients, calling patients' response to the drug a mixed bag. He said the hospital's infectious disease doctor have been using the 5-day regime to treat patients confirmed and suspected to have the virus, as some studies have shown hydroxychloroquine can decrease the viral load in patients with COVID-19, and it has been implemented in hospitals across the country. Their observational feelings are that it's positively influenced the outcome on some cases, Wilson said. We have had other cases that patients have not done as well. It's a mixed bag at this point in time, but it has favorable outcomes in some circumstances. Economy. TWC sees 1.2 million unemployment claims in 1 month, by Mella McEwen. Newly unemployed Texans. The Texas Workforce Commission wants you to know it feels your urgency and understands your frustration in being unable to file unemployment insurance claims. Cisco Gomez, the commissioner's spokesman, said the agency has been expanding hours at its call centers, adding call centers, hiring more staff, and enlisting 245 volunteers from workforce boards around the state as well as from the Texas House and Senate to help with the flood of filings. During a Facebook Live briefing Wednesday, the second of three being held weekly during the COVID-19 pandemic, Gomez noted that since that week ended March 14th, the commission has helped more than 1.2 million Texans apply for unemployment benefits. That's over a year and a half of claims in just a month's time, he pointed out. Of those 1.2 million, more than half began receiving payments, and the commission has paid more than $400 million in benefits since the week ending March 14th, he said. The largest amount was paid on April 13th, when $183 million were paid to 137,000 claimants. That compares to the previous week, April 6th, when $41 million was paid to 64,000 claimants. Gomez explained that the reason for the big increase is that the commission this week began paying an additional $600 to those receiving benefits. We are focused on helping Texans in need, he said. The commission has extended hours at its four call centers, which are now open daily from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and in the process of opening two more call centers, which should be 100% operational next week, as the 350 additional agents complete their training. Two additional call centers are expected to go into service later this year, he said. Still, Gomez said the commission is seeing a decrease in call volumes, with the number of calls falling from 3 million in a single day on April 6th to 2 million in a single day on April 13th. To improve service at the call centers, Gomez said 150 emergency hires have been made for the centers, part of the commission's goal of hiring 175. In addition, staff from other departments have been moved to unemployment insurance services. Between the new hires and volunteers, he said 1,000 will soon be helping Texans file unemployment claims. Asked how many commission employees are answering calls on a daily basis, He said the TWC's Unemployment Insurance Services has a staff of 1,500, with a third answering calls. The other jobs are just as important in helping the system run smoothly and getting payments out, he said. He urged those seeking to file unemployment claims to file online if possible, estimating 90% of unemployment claims are processed online. If that's not possible, he urged would-be filers to continue calling the call centers, since the additional capacity should make the process easier in the very near future. And he assured claimants who had been given a deadline that if they were unable to meet that deadline, they will not be penalized. Claims will be backdated to when the claimants stopped working, saw reduced hours, was furloughed, or laid off as far back as March 8th, he said. One of the biggest problems we're seeing is that new claimants are not requesting benefit payments, he said. If they're not doing that, we're unable to pay them. Don't just apply for unemployment. Request payment at the same time, and you should be doing that every 2 weeks. Make that request when you file and continue to do so every 2 weeks, even if you haven't received payment yet. Workforce commissioners have recently approved measures to help child care centers that remain open by increasing supplemental payments 25% based on referrals, he said. So if you're a child care center open now and want to work with the TWC, or if you're an essential worker and looking for child care, go to our website, he said. The system has also been updated to service the self-employed or independent contractors, according to Gomez. While claimants need to merely supply their Social Security number and address to file self-employed or independent contractors, 1099 workers will need to supply a copy of their 2019 IRS Form 1040 to apply. One inquiry unique to the COVID-19 pandemic asked about an employee of a company deemed non-essential, but the owner refused to close, although the mayor of the city has a shelter-in-place order. If the employee worried about getting sick or passing the virus to family members refused to go to work, would they qualify for unemployment benefits? In each case, we will investigate, Gomez replied. Our decision will depend on information from the claimant and the employer. In this scenario, the claimant may have a good argument based on a reasonable concern of unnecessary risk of exposure to infection. They could also explain it would be unreasonable for non-essential employees to go against public safety orders. And although the commission has helped 1.2 million Texans file unemployment claims, Gomez pointed out that hiring is going on in Texas, noting that more than 500,000 jobs are currently posted on the commission's workintexas.com website. Midlander participates in antibody research in Colorado by J.C. Lewis. A Trinity School of Midland 2004 graduate and part-time Midlander, has participated in a coronavirus antibody research in Telluride, Colorado. Cameron Salehi Kelly was finishing working during the ski season in Telluride, where she owns a small venue, when the governor of Colorado announced a statewide stay-at-home order on March 26th. She has been staying in Telluride with her family since the order went into effect. As far as the antibody test, I'm happy to participate in it because I think it just gets us that much closer to being able to get back to a new normal, she said. I think the sooner we are able to test everybody and put in place guidelines, then things can get back to normal. United Biomedical Group C19, UBI, partnered with San Miguel County to test an entire county's population with a new antibody diagnostic test with the goal of detecting and containing community spread. The partnership also hopes to provide a more accurate assessment of disease prevalence, according to a press release from UBI. A similar study was conducted in Vo, Italy, and the rate of infection was lowered by 90%. The owners of UBI, Mihi Hu and Lou Reese, are part-time residents of Telluride, Kelly said. They have labs around the world and have developed an antibody test that had been successful in different places overseas, but they had never gotten to do an entire community, she said. Where Telluride is situated, and because of the geographic location, it's a pretty easy to do that for our county. We're not near any big towns, and traffic is limited, especially now that everything has been shelter in place for a while. It was pretty easy to control a study. Now, San Miguel County has a population of 8,000 people. Kelly said about 6,000 people have committed to participating in the study. I feel very lucky and very blessed that we were able to be a part of something, she said. It kind of makes you focus on that as opposed to everything else going on. It makes you feel like you're doing something hopeful. UBI has developed an antibody blood screening test for coronavirus, as well as progressing a vaccine, which is currently in animal testing. The San Miguel County Public Health Department started testing the county in late March. The testing is free, voluntarily, and is done twice, about 14 days apart. In Telluride, they set up a high school for testing, and I just went there and got my blood drawn, then went on my way, she said. It was very easy and well-structured. She said she knows people will go ski in Italy, then come back and ski in Aspen, Vail, or Telluride. She said nobody expected Governor Jared Polis to close the ski resorts during spring break. Kelly said that the pandemic has impacted her event space and florist business, which she hasn't been able to get flowers because of the world restrictions. It's definitely impacting our businesses, and our event space isn't that big, but it's effectively shut down, and any non-essential business has been shut down for quite some time, making things difficult, she said. Kelly said her family usually comes back to Midland during April or May, but the pandemic has delayed its return. She said she hopes to get back to Midland in time for her son, Cyrus, to start K-2 at Trinity in the fall. She said Trinity has continued to be a great community for family is involved with. We are a small school, so we do have that community, but it's usually with the people in the grades you matriculate with, she said. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said he was participating in the Community Health Assessment Tool, also known as CHAT, and you should too. CHAT is a texting survey to help determine coronavirus impact on the community. It was such a priority for Midland County Judge Terry Johnson that he called for the program to begin even before the Commissioner's Court approved the up to $15,000 price tag. Johnson said, in justifying the county's purchase, it provides more information to help the community respond to the coronavirus pandemic. Myers said basically the same thing on Tuesday. It gives us a unique perspective on the broader community itself, Myers said. It could be among the many tools that we are using to understand the impact of the disease. The community seems to have a lack of understanding about coronavirus. Social media is filled with alleged best practices and the latest about COVID-19. But the community should listen to the local medical experts and CDC for the best information on coronavirus. Will CHAT bring a scientific evidence about coronavirus? No, and no one is making that claim. Could it be used in the decision-making process to better understand the overall health of our community through this pandemic? Myers thinks so. Midland County Emergency Management has committed to sharing the information not only with Unified Command, but also directly with Midland Health, Myers said. The determining factor of CHAT's success will be our residents' participation and the accuracy of the information they report. This brings us back to our original point of this article. You should participate to help emergency management officials have the best data. To participate, text the word CHAT, C-H-A-T, to phone number 432-287-7337. The good news is that about 700 people opted into the program as of Monday, and 96.3% of those opting in responded, officials said. Want to give Midland County emergency management officials more information to make the best decisions, including when to reopen the city? Put your texting fingers to the test.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the MRT for Thursday, April 16th. Donations to MMH. The Abel Hanger Medical Pavilion, 200 Andrews Highway, is where people can drop off items being donated to Midland Memorial Hospital. Protective equipment such as masks, gloves, eyewear, and disposable gowns. But those items are not the only good things that have come our way. Public Relations Manager for Midland Health, said in an email. We have received meals and treats from many local businesses, tallow, 3D shields, fabric masks, groceries, fabric, ear saver strips, and headbands, nutritional supplements, cards, and prayers. The donation site is manned 10 a.m. to noon, Monday through Friday. Again, that is at Abel Hanger Medical Pavilion, 200 Andrews Highway. Midland Young Leaders Challenge Moving Forward with Essay Contest. The General Tommy Franks Leadership Institute's Midland Young Leaders Challenge, MYLC, has been canceled because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Though the event, originally scheduled for June 17th through the 18th, has been postponed, rising seniors will still have the opportunity to compete for scholarships via an essay writing contest. The first place winner will be awarded a $1,000 college scholarship, and the second place winner will earn a $500 scholarship. All current high school juniors, class of 2021, from Midland County are eligible. This includes students from Midland ISD, Greenwood ISD, and private schools, as well as homeschool students. Applicants must submit their essays to admin at TommyFranksMuseum.org no later than May 15th. Winners will be announced in June. The topic for the essay is Leadership in Today's World. Those wishing to apply may visit MidlandYoungLeaders.com for details on the topic, as well as additional submission guidelines. Essays should be no longer than 2,250 words, not counting footnotes. Essays should be original, must be original rather, not having been previously published or being considered for publication. Entry into the contest is free. In addition, current high school juniors who meet the deadline to apply for the original program will have their applications carried over to the 2021 MYLC, where they will still be eligible to participate even if they have already completed high school. Those applicants will be contacted individually. MC and KMB partner for Earth Day event. Midland College Students Activities is partnering with Keep Midland Beautiful, KMB, for a social media campaign to raise awareness of community environment for Earth Day. The two organizations are encouraging MC students, employees, and community members to post photos of original artwork made with recycled materials or repurposed projects in support of Earth Day 2020. For recycled art, social media postings should include before and after photo with a description of the materials used and the symbolism or message of the piece. Submissions will be accepted via social media using the following hashtags. Hashtag MCRecycleArt or hashtag KMB Environmental Project. For repurposed projects, postings should consist of a before and after photo with a description of materials that have been used from your home and the symbolism or message of the piece. Submissions should use the following hashtags. Hashtag MC Repurpose Project or KMB Environmental Project. All posts are due by April 22nd, which has officially been designated as Earth Day. The theme for Earth Day 2020 is climate action. Earth Day is a unified response to an environment in crisis. For more information about this project, contact Taniqua Hurdle at thurdle, that's T-H-U-R-D-L-E, at midland.edu. Grocery store hours during coronavirus. Albertsons Market, 1002 Andrews Highway, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. For shoppers 60 and over, 3317 North Midland Drive, 7 to 9 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday. HEB, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Market Street, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. For shoppers 60 and over, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. Walmart, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m.
Obituaries. Eleanor Monteith Terrell. Eleanor Terrell, formerly of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, April 8, 2020. Eleanor was born in Denver, Colorado on May 9, 1926, to George and Mabel Taylor Irving. Her parents were both born in Aberdeen, Scotland, and met and married while living in New York City. The family eventually moved to Oakland, California. Eleanor worked as a messenger at the Oakland Army Base, where she met Kenneth Terrell. The two were married in February 1946 and spent the next 70 years together before his death in 2016. She left her family in California and moved to Texas with her new husband at the tender age of 19. They raised a family in Texas, Oklahoma, and Colorado before retiring to Midland. The final years of their lives were spent in Austin, Texas. Eleanor is survived by her loving sister and longest friend, Gladys Burrow, of Palm Desert, California. Her three children, son Rob of Denver, son Rick and wife Tony of Las Cruces, New Mexico, and daughter Kathy and husband Terry O'Connor of Austin. Two grandchildren, one granddaughter, two stepchildren, and many nieces and nephews whom she loved dearly. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Kenneth, her sister Georgine, and husband Clifford Moorer, and dear brother-in-law Marvin Burrow. She would love for you to honor her with donations to Senior Life Midland. A celebration of her life will be conducted at a later time. Please stay in touch with her family at eleanorterryfamily@gmail.com for more information. www.baskisfuneralchapellascruces.com. Gloria Ogle Kovacic. Gloria Ogle Kovacic, age 63 of Midland, Texas, passed away on Easter Sunday, April 12, 2020, with Carl Kovacic, her loving husband, by her side. Olga was born September 7, 1956, to Jose and Olivia Primera in Odessa, Texas. Olga graduated from Midland High School 1975 and the University of Texas of the Permian Basin 2002. Olga was preceded by her father, Jose Primera Sr. She is survived by her husband, Carl Kovacic, mother Olivia Primera, sisters Clarabelle, Linda, Patsy, and Dilly, and brother Jose Jr. Ogle. Ogle was a loving mother to her two children, Vivian, Danny Davis, and Jesse Naomi Robledo. Two children by marriage, Kyle Kovacic and Matthew Holly Kovacic. Olga was a proud grandmother to eight grandchildren. The family would like to express their sincere gratitude to all of those who have reached out and offered support during this trying time. Ogle will be laid to rest in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, which she called the most beautiful place on earth. A celebration of Ogle's family will be held at a later to be determined date. In lieu of flowers, Ogle requested that memorial donations be made to your local first responders wherever you call home. I love you more. See you in the wind. Olga Kovacic. John D. Schoon. John D. Schoon, 64 of Midland, passed away on Thursday, April 9th, 2020, at Midland Memorial Hospital. Public viewing will be held from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday, April 18th, 2020, at Natalie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Live stream viewing will take place on Saturday, April 18th, 2020, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at www.livestream.com/MPW. John was born on August 21st, 1955, in Canton, Illinois, to John Willard and Ann Schoon. He married his loving wife, Christina, in 2012. John owned and operated a computer business in Peoria, Illinois, until he moved to Midland. He was currently employed at SciTech Texoma, a sister company of Warren Equipment. John is survived by his wife, Christina Schoon, children John Anthony Schoon, and wife Erin of Canton, Illinois, Emily Little, and husband Cassidy of L.A. Junta, California, one brother, James Schoon, and wife Susan of Tucson, Arizona, one sister, Pamela Price, and husband Matt of Princeville, Illinois, two grandsons, one niece, four nephews, several cousins, aunts and uncles, and a multitude of friends. He is preceded in death by one infant sister, Valerie Schoon, and one older sister, Cheryl Nussman, and infant granddaughter, Penelope Little. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made to www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Dorothy McQuarrie. Dorothy McQuarrie, 89, of Midland, passed away April 14, 2020. Graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, April 18, 2020, at Cahoma Cemetery in Cahoma. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, April 16th, 2020, front page. Promotion decision coming soon. OA News at OAOA.com. Hector County ISD has provided teachers and principals with guidance on grading, but promotion and retention is not yet firm. Superintendent Scott Murray said during the Board of Trustees workshop Tuesday that the district wants this to be a do-no-harm period of time. The meeting was held via telephone, and Vice President Delma Abalos was absent. The last time students were present in class was March 5th, Murray said. So whatever a student's grade was at that time, they can't do any worse. We do not want this experience to harm in any way any of our students, Murray said. All students should have an opportunity to improve. None of our kids should be penalized during this period. The student can improve their grade with the work they do now. Teaching at ECISD has gone digital, or with paper and pencil from packets that are picked up at the campuses. Murray noted that every student's experience is different. Some students have support all day long from their parents, but there are other children who live in multifamily homes who have no adult present throughout the day and may not have access to technology. Murray said guidance on promotion and retention will be provided in the coming days. He noted that the state has passed some specific guidance for seniors who have not passed the end-of-course exams. Murray said this may be an opportunistic moment for those students to graduate, as there is no state testing at this time. He added that state testing cannot be a reason for a child not to graduate or be promoted this year. On a separate item, Murray said Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes has reached out and asked for help from school nurses on testing for COVID-19. He said more information will be coming out on that. The ECISD Police Department has been active. Murray said they have finished installation barricades at all elementary, middle, and high school campuses. On the welfare checks of families that haven't been heard from since school went remote, Murray said as of Tuesday, more than 450 checks have been conducted. Over half of those students and families have not connected with their schools in 4 weeks. For those that aren't home, officers leave lime green cards with the child's school and phone number requesting they call the campus. There also is a need for correct phone numbers and contact information. Murray said the welfare checks will be ongoing. School nutrition has now served 500,000 meals, offering breakfast and lunch at one pickup time, Monday through Friday, and serving meals for the weekend on Friday. District counselors are staffing a family support line available Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., at 456-HELP, 4357. Premier Care picks up during the off hours, so support is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Technology is another huge resource for students, families, and teachers currently. The technology team has started a help desk to answer questions, and more information about Wi-Fi is coming for the short and long term, including a possible partnership with the city and county. On child care for medical personnel, Murray said ECISD is working with the governor's office and State Representative Brooks Landgraf, R. Odessa, to start a facility at Zavala Elementary School. In other business, the board discussed revisions to board policy DHE, local employee standards of conduct, searches and alcohol drug testing. Administration will bring a revision for approval on April 21st that will continue pre-employment drug testing. However, the policy revision will allow the district to offer a contract to the employee pending results of drug testing. This is the first reading of this policy. It will be on the agenda next week for a second reading and a vote. Voted 6-0 to approve a modification of board policy DEA, Local Compensation and Benefits, Compensation Plan. This update addresses work from home and premium pay. Voted 6-0 to modify board policy DEC, Local Compensation and Benefits, Leaves and Absences. This policy update specifies the way employees who are retiring or resigning are compensated for leave time accrued while working in ECISD. The current policy related to leave and pay upon separation remains in effect through June 30th. The new policy becomes effective on July 1st. Voted 6-0 to adopt a resolution regarding wage payments during extended disruption of normal district operations. This resolution extends, for an additional 5 weeks, the original one approved by the trustees in March. Voted 6-0 to approve a waiver from the educator appraisal requirements due to COVID-19. While all employees will still be required to have a formal evaluation, this action may waive elements of an appraisal that cannot be completed due to the COVID-19 closure. Human Resources and Leadership will be providing additional guidance when the waiver is approved by the Texas Education Agency. A Bald Boost. Teacher Shaves Head Brings Joy by Ruth Campbell. RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Although they didn't have to take the state of Texas assessments of academic readiness test this spring, Ireland Elementary School 5th grade reading teacher Justin Cross decided to give his students a boost. He shaved his head. This was actually the second challenge that I've done. When we took our benchmark in February, we had a goal set for them previously. If we looked at their scores from last year, and then we looked at this year's score that they had just taken, and if they hit that mark, which was above their score last year, they got to pie Mr. Cross in the face outside, Cross said. He added that they want students to do their best on the star, and 55 or 65 students had already hit the goal 2 months before. Confident they would have hit the 70% mark if they had taken the test and showed growth, he made the gesture. Showing growth would have meant the students were ready for sixth grade. The idea to shave his head came about during a fifth grade teacher meeting when Cross realized they were supposed to be taking the exam that day. Then he had a meeting with his students and told them to tell all their friends he would shave his head the next day because I know y'all would have crushed it. With almost 30 students in his Google Meets meeting, he encouraged them, talked to them about where they could find assignments for about 10 minutes, then went into his kitchen and shaved his head live for them. They absolutely loved it. They thought it was the most hilarious thing they'd ever seen in their lives. And you know what, in a time like this, if I can put a smile on one of those kids' faces for 2 seconds, it was worth it, Cross said. He added that if he could be a source of joy for just a couple of minutes by doing something like shaving his head, he was pleased to oblige. I knew Mr. Cross promised the fifth graders he would shave his head if they met their growth goals on STAR this year. Students work hard and are motivated by such a thing. The fifth graders were on target to make the growth, and we were excited to see the results, and then STAR was canceled due to the pandemic school closure. Mr. Cross believed in his students and wanted to follow through with his promise regardless of actually taking the test. I think it keeps his students engaged and feeling confident in their learning. We are so proud of the work our students put in this year at Ireland. They definitely earned Mr. Cross's hair loss, Principal Katie Ochoa said in an email. Cross has been with ECISD for 3 years, starting off as a long-term sub at Burleson Elementary. He also has taught at Bonham Middle School and has been a full-time certified teacher with the district for 2 full years. He noted that any kind of extra motivation helps, especially at the elementary level. He said he hopes this will all be over sooner rather than later, and that a get-together like a barbecue can be arranged so the students can say goodbye to their friends and have some kind of ending for the school year. Cross said he has been impressed with how fast administrators got remote learning going. It's been miraculous, and the feedback from the parents has been fantastic. The teachers that I've been out there working with have been absolutely phenomenal. We want to be back in classrooms. We want to see our kids. It's heartbreaking to think that I may not get to see them face to face again, as a fifth grader, Cross said. He said he was pretty tech savvy, but Cross said he still had to adjust. It's been a huge learning curve because it's everything. Like when I put directions down on the internet, whether it's through Class Dojo or Google Classroom, I have to be so specific on what I'm asking the students to do because they just have to read this one thing. I can't write 2 pages of instructions, so I have to be very careful on what words I'm using to be as specific as I can but not over-explain, Cross said. He added that the fifth grade teachers are getting videos out so students see them on a daily basis. Cross said he conducts a meeting every day for an hour with students that need help, whether it's with technology or a lesson. But once a week on Thursdays, Cross also offers an hour time slot when he can help parents and students. He will help even later than that, but by 11 p.m. he's asleep. Now that this challenge is complete, Cross said he needs a new hook. The students have suggested TikTok videos. I told them that I would research it and look into all that, but I've had several say TikTok videos, so that would be something in the future that I would do educational funny TikTok videos, he said. EOC goes mostly virtual by Michael Merlo. MMERLO at OAOA.com. After announcing the second potential COVID-19 exposure at Ector County Health Department's Emergency Operations Center, County Commissioner Dale Childers said that they have a few people still working at the Southside Senior Center, EOC, but for the most part, they will be working virtually until they get test results back. Childers said several were tested at the EOC on Wednesday, and more will be tested on Thursday. When we get those test results back, he said, then we'll hopefully open back up in a limited fashion. Ector County Health Department Director Brandy Garcia reported that there are a total of 48 positive cases in Ector County. Their website shows they have tested a total of 631 people, 516 negative cases, 67 pending lab results, 23 recovered patients, and 2 deaths. There have been 3 deaths reported in Ector County hospitals, but only 2 have been reported because 1 was not an Ector County resident. Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin said that MCH has 27 positives, 3 in the critical care unit on ventilators, and 2 on a different COVID-19 designated floor. MCH has 223 negatives with 40 pending and 7 persons under investigation pending results in the hospital, 3 in the CCU, and 4 on the other designated floor. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown said that ORMC has tested 126 people. 9 of those tested positive, 109 negative, and 8 pending. She said there are 3 patients under investigation in the hospital, and 1 of those is confirmed. When Childers was asked when the EOC would release a map with locations of positive COVID-19 patient clusters, he said they are working on it and can get it to the public pretty quick. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Rohit Sarvanan referenced a study about neurological manifestations of COVID-19 patients. Neurological manifestations are a very small percent of the overall manifestations of COVID-19. Obviously, the respiratory and the systemic manifestations are more. He said that drowsiness, weakness in muscles, and strokes were involved in 5% or less cases, So, neurological is not the biggest COVID-19 manifestation. He said that patients are monitored for signs of stroke and changes of levels in consciousness in the hospital, but are also asking patients to monitor themselves for those symptoms when sent home. Saravanan said that ORMC is using a test-based strategy, which is two negative tests more than 24 hours apart. MCH and ORMC reported that no employees have tested positive for the virus. When asked to compare the 27,850 COVID-19-related deaths in the United States that CNN reported to the number of flu deaths, Saravanan said that for COVID-19, with all the measures we've taken, we've still lost that many, and that's why it's as serious as we make it out to be. That's why all these social distancing things are important. That's why it shut down our country as much as it did. NCH Chief of Staff and Interim Chief Medical Officer Dr. Donald Davenport said that the amount of testing done will always be a sore spot, as well as the limitations across the board. If we had the capability of testing more people, we may find that more people have it than what we expect them to have, and so that'll drive our numbers up substantially as well, he said. Davenport said that a majority of those who've tested positive in this area are able to be isolated and treated at home without hospitalization, and that's extremely important to the resources of the Permian Basin. Saravanan said that a lot of people are worried about the coronavirus, but that we can't ignore other things that could also happen, especially if you have a heart condition. So if you have chest pain, difficulty breathing, or discomfort in your neck, your arms, your shoulder, your jaw, those could be signs of a heart attack. You should call 911 for those. He also said that if people have signs of a stroke, like numbness or weakness or loss of movement on one side of the body, as well as confusion, trouble speaking, or loss of balance, then they should also call 911. Saravanan shared these symptoms during the Wednesday news conference, and they can be found at tinyul.com/RDR4A2B. He also shared information on everyday cleaning steps, as well as extra steps to clean and disinfect a living space after someone is sick, at tinyul.com/WZ7OJES.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.